Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Tuesday, March 15th, 2016. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Jonga Kandemiri.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye.
Here are our top stories this evening.
A former Zimbabwean minister claims that President Mugabe deployed the National Army in the 2008 presidential election runoff, in which 150 opposition party supporters were killed.
There is no one who can give in to the military. Military is one command. It is the commander-in-chief. And so you cannot decide against what happens if you see the military all over.
UNICEF says Zimbabwe is facing its worst malnutrition rates in 15 years, as nearly 33,000 children are in urgent need of treatment for acute malnutrition.
Because of the current situation that we are in, there's an El Nino-induced drought that is sweeping across large parts of the country.
And some former ZANU-PF members vow that they will never rejoin the party, saying it is likely to lose in the 2018 general elections.
I don't see it surviving what is happening. The infighting which is taking place within the party right now signifies the end time messages for ZANU-PF. It's not going to survive.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned.
UNICEF says Zimbabwe is facing its worst malnutrition rates in 15 years, as nearly 33,000 children are in urgent need of treatment for acute malnutrition. In a statement, UNICEF said, as an El Nino-induced drought sweeps across large parts of the country, the number of hungry families in Zimbabwe has doubled in the past 8 months. UNICEF is now requesting $21 million to meet the humanitarian needs of children in Zimbabwe in 2016. The organization noted that two consecutive seasons of failed rains have diminished food harvests and reserves, increased hunger and malnutrition, dried up water sources, and decimated livestock. According to the Zimbabwe Vulnerability Assessment Survey released last month, nearly 2.8 million people in rural Zimbabwe, or 30% of the rural population, will require food assistance, of which 1.4 million are children aged 18 years and below. Blessing Zinde, UNICEF emergency specialist, speaks with Studio 7 about the crisis.
Because of the current situation that we are in, there's an El Nino-induced drought that is sweeping across large parts of the country. And the number of hungry families have actually doubled in the past 8 months. From an earlier projection in May 2015 of 1.5 million people being food insecure at the peak of the hunger season, to the current projection of 2.8 million people being food insecure at the peak hunger season, which normally runs from January to March. And out of those affected, 1.4 million will be children that are aged 18 years and below.
So, as UNICEF, are you going to do anything?
As UNICEF, we have been responding to humanitarian situations of women and children in Zimbabwe and even at a global scale. But in Zimbabwe, we've got areas that we'll be looking at as UNICEF. The first area that we'll be looking at is the area of health and nutrition. Under that area, I will be focusing on ensuring that children that have got acute malnutrition in its most severe form receive what we call therapeutic food.
UNICEF is requesting US $21 million to meet the humanitarian needs. Where are you expecting this money to come from?
UNICEF works with donor agencies that support its programs. Most of our donor agencies have been external donors that have been supporting UNICEF programs globally. We also have individual donors who also support UNICEF programs.
That was Blessing Zinde, UNICEF emergency specialist, speaking with us from Harare.
A Gweru regional magistrate has granted bail to Gweru Mayor Hamutendi Kombai and his deputy Atwell Majkorauta and town clerk Daniel Matau, who are jointly facing charges of abuse of office. Our correspondent Taurai Shaba brings us more.
Magistrate Patek Lemsipa granted each $200 bail on condition that they should surrender their passports as well as report to the police every Friday until the matter is finalized. The case is set for April 15. The three had been in custody since last Thursday following their arrest by police on charges of abuse of office. According to the state outline, between July 2013 and June last year, Kombai, Majkorauta and Matau allegedly used their positions as public officers to abuse council funds. They allegedly paid MDCT leader Morgan Trangrai's bill of $1,875 at a private lodge outside Gweru. The three are alleged to have also conspired to make a payment of $6,858 at a local hotel and at another lodge, prejudicing council of a total of $8,733. The state had opposed the granting of bail, arguing that the charges that the trio was facing were serious and that they could interfere with witnesses or abscond. But in a granting of bail, Musipa said the allegations that the accused are facing originate from an audit done in July last year, and they had been aware of them for a while. Musipa said in the intervening period, one of the accused, Kombai, had traveled to the United Kingdom and back, adding that this was not consistent with someone who would flee. The magistrate also said the matter had been reported in December 2015, and the police had adequate time to carry out their investigations, so there was no risk that the three could interfere. Attorney Brian Dewey, one of the lawyers representing the three, confirmed the grant of bail to Studio 7 and said the accused are denying the charges that they are facing.
As far as we are concerned, the charges are just also another way of abusing and trying to break the spirit of the mayor.
Prior to his arrest, Kombai and some of his colleagues had recently been seeking to resume their normal duties following last month's High Court ruling overturning their suspension. Local Government Minister Sevia Kasukwere last August suspended all 18 Gweru councillors on allegations of abuse of office, maladministration and corruption, but the court ruled that the suspension was illegal as the minister has no powers to act unilaterally under the country's constitution. Reporting for Studio 7 from Bulawayo, this is Taurai Shawa.
Former resident minister and ZANU-PF member of parliament for Mwenezi East, Kudakwashe Basikiti, has sensationally claimed that President Robert Mugabe personally deployed members of the Zimbabwe National Army to wage a violent campaign against the opposition movement for democratic change leader Morgan Tsvangirai in the run-up to the presidential election rerun in 2008. In an exclusive interview with VOA Studio 7, Basikiti claims that the military takes orders from Mr. Mugabe and nobody else. He says the Zimbabwe Defense Forces cannot leave the barracks without his authority. The opposition MDC alleges that about 150 of its supporters were killed in the campaign and tens of thousands forced to flee their homes due to political violence. Basikiti tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu his new party, the Zimbabwe People First, led by former Vice President Joyce Mujuru, has the full list of officers who allegedly terrorized the people in 2008, and the party's leadership will release the names at a later stage.
What happened is that there was full realization that the people have lost confidence in the ZANU-PF leader, and then the only way to salvage the disappointment and the embarrassment was for him as the commander-in-chief to command the military to salvage the loss which had been witnessed. And that is known, it's public knowledge, that the members of the opposition stopped voting and they just went into hiding, including their leader, and then you can not say there was an election. That's why there was a even the GNU was not even warranted. That shows even it speaks against the sincerity of the African Union. Because if a political party wins an election, it has to be given mandate to rule. And this issue should have been given mandate to rule in 2008. because they won the election. But the African Union, because they still entertain the spirit of Pan-Africanism and the political parties which fought the revolution, the war of liberation, to be protected, they saw it fit just to protect one leader who participated in the liberation, the war of the liberation struggle. But ironically, the same leader was fighting against the principles of that revolutionary struggle and is now responsible for enslaving and oppressing its own people.
So who exactly gave the military the order to leave the barracks and go and campaign? Is it Mr. Mugabe himself?
There is no one who can give an order to the military. Military is one command, and it is the commander-in-chief. And so you cannot side against what happens if you see the military all over. They have been commanded by the same chain of command.
So were these retired army officers or they were serving army officers?
Army personnel, we know them by name, and we know where they stay and how they are operating.
That was former ZANU-PF lawmaker Kudakwashe Basikiti speaking with Studio FS7's Blessing Zulu. Zimbabwe's laws, including the Defense Forces Act and the Constitution, prohibit the military from participating in politics and partisan interference in electoral affairs. ZANU-PF Chairman Simon Kayamoyo was not reachable for comment as his mobile phone was not taking incoming calls.
In a related development, some former ZANU-PF members say the ongoing purging of party activists with divergent views is an indication that the former liberation movement is crumbling. They claim that the current leadership of the party is now out of touch with reality and many people want to leave ZANU-PF. Our correspondent, Anta Chigoriwa, has more details from Chinoy.
At least 150 people, including former Vice President Joyce Mujuru, has been expelled following the controversial elective ZANU-PF Congress in 2014. Mrs. Mujuru, former Party Administration Secretary Didmus Mutasa, former ZANU-PF spokesperson Lugare Gumba and others were accused of attempting to topple President Mugabe before the Congress. Some of the expelled activists were in the provincial, district, branch and the cell organs of the party. They were also accused of being part of the so-called Mujuru camp, which allegedly wanted to oust the then 91-year-old president. Mrs. Mujuru and her colleagues have dismissed these allegations as untrue, saying the same thing is happening to Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa, who has been accused by senior party members, including First Lady Grace Mugabe, of making some clandestine moves to succeed Mr. Mugabe through using a faction of the party known as Team Lacoste. The other faction, Generation 40, is believed to be backing Mrs. Mugabe for the presidential post. It is composed of young techs like ZANU-PF political commissar Sylvia Kasukuere and the youth minister Patrick Joao. Mrs. Mugabe says she does not want to succeed her husband. Now former ZANU-PF members say factionalism gripping the party may lead to a resounding defeat in the 2018 general polls and ultimate demise. Former party cadre Tendai Musonza, who was expelled from the party for standing as an independent candidate in a municipal election, says he will never rejoin ZANU-PF, which he claims is out of touch with what is happening in Zimbabwe. Musonza claims that only few people are now benefiting from the party.
Few individuals were now benefiting at the expense of the people. When I left ZANU-PF, at that time I was branded a sellout, but I'm now happy that some of the people who even branded me that way are now seeing the same reasons why I left it, and those same people are now out of ZANU-PF too.
Another former ZANU-PF member, Dennis Kagonye, who worked for the now defunct party mouthpiece, The Voice, says he was fired for expressing party members' concerns, especially on the status of the ailing economy. Kagonye, who is now an independent publisher of a weekly community newspaper, The Mirror, says he liked the ZANU-PF political ideology when he joined the party, but got fed up when he discovered that the leadership of the party did not care about the needs of party activists.
I could not issue my views about the status of the country by then. because it was one-sided, the editorial. The People's Voice was meant as a party's paper. The ideology of ZANU-PF were good to me. But when I joined the system, that's when I started to see things differently.
Kagonye was fired by then-Secretary for Information Nathan Shamyarira for airing his independent views about how the party was allegedly distancing itself from the people. Themba Muliswa, former ZANU-PF Mashonaland West chairperson who was expelled from the party in 2014, says there is no democracy in the ruling party. Muliswa believes that President Mugabe does not have good advisors anymore compared to the time when he used to be deputized by people like the late Vice Presidents Simon Muzenda and Joshua Ngomo. He says Mr. Mugabe is no longer in control of the party, which he claims is now almost in the hands of his wife, Grace.
He had to respect those people. You know, you've got to understand that Joshua Nkomo had the respect, being the father of Zimbabwe and the leader in Matabeleland, ZAPU leader. Simon Mzenda was the guru of politics in Masvingo, representing the Karangas. That was very important. And those are two key tribes that you need in you being able to control the country. Those were very strong people, equally the same age, able to talk, able to criticize and so forth.
Muliswa says there's life outside ZANU-PF.
What happened to me is a blessing in disguise. I believed that I was going to be one of the key players in the party in terms of raising to the top, because I think the party had then taken a position to infuse young people. Could you still achieve that outside ZANU-PF? Yes, I realize that you could actually achieve that outside ZANU-PF.
His sentiments are echoed by several other former ruling party members who strongly believe that ZANU-PF will lose in the 2018 general elections. Musonza says the continuous paging of party activists indicates that ZANU-PF won't retain power in the general polls.
I don't see it surviving what is happening. The infighting which is taking place within the party right now signifies the end time messages for ZANU-PF. It's not going to survive.
But ZANU-PF youth Tatenda Chitate is adamant that ZANU-PF is here to stay. He says those people who think that the party will collapse are daydreaming.
ZANU-PF is actually not in a succession crisis. It will remain strong and is still strong. We have the grassroots. We've got the support. Even if you look at by-election results, party is winning with wide margins. So there's no succession crisis. Party is strong, and we're busy preparing for the 2018 general elections, which will win resoundingly.
The pinching of ZANU-PF members in the past has seen high-profile members like former president of the party, the late Ndabaning Stole, former ZANU-PF Secretary General Edgar Tekere, and the Politburo member Simba Makoni forming their own political parties. Reporting for Studio 7 in Shinoi, this is Arthur Chigoriwa.
Coming up,
a Zimbabwean woman says she's getting remarkable rewards from tobacco farming.
Two Italian residents of Zimbabwe are mistakenly shot dead in a wildlife conservancy.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
Polls are open in 5 U.S. states where voters are making their choices in presidential primaries today, as Republican Donald Trump and Democrat Hillary Clinton seek to further their leads while those trailing try to inject new life into their campaigns.
The hacker, collectively known as Anonymous, says it has declared a total war on Republican presidential hopeful Donald Trump.
Belgian authorities say shots have been fired during an anti-terrorism raid in Brussels.
The first wave of Russian warplanes arrived home Tuesday from Syria following President Vladimir Putin's surprise announcement to withdraw most of his forces from the Middle Eastern country after a 5.5-month operation.
And Burundi says it is disappointed in the European Union's decision to suspend some aid to the Burundian government.
To Tobacco remains one of Zimbabwe's biggest sources of foreign currency, bringing in millions annually. Men have largely been the key producers, but more and more women are also starting to enter the field on a commercial basis. In our economic slot today, we feature Nomsa Mapfunde, a single woman in Doma, Mangura, who decided to grow tobacco. Though a major export crop for Zimbabwe, tobacco yields last year were low due to poor rains and other factors. Mapfunde tells Studio 7's Chuaniso Jani that government should do more to encourage women to grow the profitable crop so as to help grow the economy.
Then I thought, you know, it's a male-dominated environment, but I think I can do it. I just decided to research on it, talk to people who've done it, and I felt encouraged and felt I could do it. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to go for it because it's a cash crop. And financially, if you're getting into farming, you will definitely start off well.
How many women have entered into tobacco farming?
No, I don't have exact numbers, but that is a very challenging area, very male-dominated. So you find that the women that are doing it, they definitely have a partner, but not on their own like I am, on my own, without anybody else. Women in tobacco farming, maybe there are widows out there in small-scale farmers, but are probably not doing it on a large scale like I do. So maybe then I don't get to meet them. But when you go to the floor, that's when you then get to meet.
Can you please tell us about the challenges you are going through as a woman in tobacco farming?
Financing, first and foremost. Before you start doing tobacco, you've got to make sure that you've got your finances in order. Because the banks at the moment in Zimbabwe are not giving us money. There's so much security collateral that they need, which you sometimes do not have. So you find that you're digging deep in your pocket. So that's the biggest challenge. Equipment, you need to have good equipment. And then there's also the aspect of when you're irrigating, VESA, electricity. When there are rainfalls, the faults that happen, they're so bad that the incompetence that is there to come and fix can take a whole week and you need to cure your tobacco, then you may have a loss.
With the drought in Zimbabwe, how are you coping in terms of farming tobacco?
The drought has been a very big challenge in a very difficult season that we're having. But I just want to thank God that I do have irrigation. I have a dam at my farm and I'm able to irrigate. But my irrigation system is not the best. And then the dam and the water, the levels are not high enough as well. That's another challenge because you don't get enough water because we share the dam. Yeah, we are going through a tough time. Even when the rains come as well, you're also facing challenges where you may have your tobacco damaged by hailstorms. You know, we fear as a farmer, especially in this drought season, because it gets very, very hot. Season is one of the most difficult that I've encountered as a tobacco farmer.
Can you tell us about the performance of tobacco in the Zimbabwe market right now?
There's the shortage of tobacco this year due to the rainfall patterns that have changed. And when people that didn't have irrigation are disadvantaged compared to people that have got irrigation. And I believe we're going to have a very short marketing season as well.
Tobacco is seen as hazardous to health. What can you say as a tobacco farmer?
Yes, we've heard that. But at the moment, they haven't banned tobacco yet. So legally, I will still farm tobacco. But, you know, it also has medicinal advantages. While it's got its health hazards, there's a case where Ebola, they were looking at using tobacco for treatment. Yes, the world is saying tobacco is hazardous. Well, if it's banned all over the world, then I'll stop. But while it's still, you know, being allowed to, some will do it.
As a woman farmer, do you feel the government is doing enough to help you in terms of resources you need and the funding being provided?
They are not. They do not. They have organizations, but not particularly to fund farming in tobacco, per se. They haven't done enough research. They don't have enough statistics or information with regards to women in particular. They have farmers, but do they really have the numbers of the women who are standalone women farmers? I don't think so. So there isn't much that is being done today, Chuaniso, unfortunately. That's how I feel, because I have been to farming on my own and digging deep in my pocket. And whatever I have done now, I had to push really hard, you know. And you feel that challenge at times that, you know, is it because I'm a woman? But I have never given up. Because I've said to myself, we are equal human beings. and I can equally do it. So I think the government is not doing enough, unfortunately.
Are you affiliated to any organization that assists you?
I have never really been in any organization, but I'm looking at encouraging women, because in society, naturally, in Zimbabwe, women were not taken seriously in farming. But if you look at it, generally, women are the ones that took children to school with farming. So as a farmer right now, I'm actually looking at that idea that maybe we should set up an organization for women specifically in tobacco farming.
That was Norma Mapfunde speaking with Studio 7's Choniso Jani from Doma, Mangura, Mashonaland West Province.
Seven Zimbabweans suspected of trafficking nearly 200 women from Zimbabwe to Kuwait have been granted bail pending a trial in Harare. According to Newsday newspaper, the seven were granted $300 bail each for allegedly transporting the women to Kuwait under the guise of offering them employment. Reporter Tatenda Gumbo speaks to migration expert Mlamuli Nkomo about human trafficking.
There are a number of things that can actually explain that situation. The first one being the economic situation in most African countries and in Zimbabwe in particular. The economic hardships are driving a lot of people to, they are now desperate actually, they will take any promise for a job without actually scrutinizing.
And Mr. Nkomo, what are these promises? How do they unveil themselves?
The obvious thing is that they are promised higher earnings. Underlying factor is that people are promised nice jobs, especially in the tourism and hospitality industry. They are told that they will be working in fancy areas and they will be earning a lot of money.
And we know that Zimbabwe passed an anti-trafficking act. In your view, do you think that it's doing enough to combat this issue, or what more can be done?
The issue of trafficking is a two-way. It is the sending country where people are being trafficked from and the receiving country where the people are actually end up going to. So as long as there is no coordination between the continents and countries, this thing will continue to be there.
That was migration expert Mlamuli Nkomo on the line with Studio 7's Tatenda Gumbo from Johannesburg, South Africa.
Two Italian residents of Zimbabwe were a few days ago shot dead while on an anti-poaching patrol. Emmanuel Fudinda, chairman of the Zimbabwe Safaris Operators Association, tells AP that Claudio Shirarelli and his son, Marcelomino Shirarelli, were shot dead while they were repairing the car that had broken down in Manapul's wildlife conservation area.
This was a very unfortunate incident in that we have lost one very iconic person, a renowned professional hunter, an operator of good repute, Claudio Chiarelli, and his son Max. Poaching has increased dramatically. In fact, their car broke down, and Claudio and son Max went out of the car to attend to the vehicle. And as they were attending to the vehicle, the next thing they heard were gunshots and firearms, which really never gave them a chance even to retaliate. And the firearms exchange came in so quickly to a point that they flew down both Claudio and Max, and the other professional under Francesco managed to escape and hide behind the vehicle and in thick grass.
That was Emmanuel Fundira, chairman of the Zimbabwe Safari Operators Association, speaking with the Associated Press. The Italian Foreign Ministry says the two were killed in unclear circumstances.
Remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. today, when our hosts of The Connection, Ntungamili Nkomo and Tatenda Gumbo, will be talking with listeners and experts about human trafficking in Zimbabwe amid reports that 200 Zimbabweans are stuck in Kuwait in the Middle East.
Now to recap on today's top stories.
A former Zimbabwean minister claims that President Mugabe deployed the National Army in the 2008 presidential election rerun in which 150 opposition party supporters were killed.
UNICEF says Zimbabwe is facing its worst malnutrition rates in 15 years, as nearly 33,000 children are in urgent need of treatment for acute malnutrition.
That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Praxidus Jeremiah. This is Jonga Kandemiri in Washington.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.